Blog Talk Radio.
Did a one-hour show, the election, and we have the results are in about 11:18 last night. Barack Obama was reelected to a second term as president of the United States. You know, for all you Romney people out there, I don't like his politics. But I really appreciate his concession speech. I thought he did a good job on that. I really do. That was actually the best, the most I liked him on anything he ever did. He actually did a good job really conceding and also putting in at least some effort to try to unite the country. Because it really is what you do. And I give him credit for that. But, you know, the other thing I'll say is to you Romney people that really feel like you didn't want Obama anymore. If you're making over $250,000 a year, then maybe you didn't want Obama. And since that's a very small percentage of the population, trust me on this. You know, the Madden Voice will be around in 4 years in some way, shape, or form. And I will ask you, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? You know what I mean? Because now we're getting into four more years. Right? You had the first four. And now we got the second four. Okay, it's kind of like football, right? You got the first half of the season, and now we're going to get into the second half of the season where the cream rises to the top, right? So let's see what happens. But anyway, congratulations. Congratulations to Mitt Romney, too. You know, he tried, you know, and I'm not a disrespectful dude. Try not to be. So congratulations. You know, this guy, you know, businessman and former governor, you know, he ran for president. I mean, that's a dream. So congratulations. With that said, week 10 preview. I was really looking at the lineup for the show tonight. We simplified it. But with that said, I think it's going to be very exciting. So let me introduce and give these guys a little bit better introduction tonight, since I couldn't, you know, give them the full introduction last night. We're giving an introduction tonight. EAFL 1, Super Bowl 1 winner, the man with his PhD, the Chicago Bear fan himself. We know him as Dr. Train. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
Let's go, Obama. 4 more years, baby. I'm ecstatic. Now the Bears just need to win the Super Bowl, and we all good. Baby, let's go.
He'd want that. Being from Chicago, he would want that. But
how exciting would that be? First Obama, and then his favorite team wins the Super Bowl. Come on, man.
Who cares about his football team? Who cares about this football team, man? You know. I don't love that much, man. Well, I'm going to root for his football team. He better do something about the economy. You know, I don't worry about his football team. You know, let's also bring on the number one Madden player in the world, in my opinion. And since my opinion is all that matters, then that's the way it is. This guy is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and lives out in Indianapolis. And if you ever want to watch him in action, go check out Madden Nation Season 4. I wonder if he gets dividends for that. I should get a piece of that as I promote that Madden Nation Season 4 so much. I know it's on iTunes. I'll find out. But anyway, we have Ali Quick himself. K-Star, welcome to the Madden Voice.
Happy to be here, y'all. Real quick.
Okay.
I just want to say to, you know, those who follow me on Facebook and on Twitter, I really do want to say congratulations to President Obama. Now, I personally, I don't care if I put this out there, did not vote for him, but I do want to say our electoral process is beautiful. Democracy can prevail because it's what the people spoke and it's what they wanted. And while I might not agree with them, I really do hope for the best in America. And, again, congratulations to President Obama.
That was very mature of you. Very mature of you. Yeah. 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 I mean, what choice did you have?
I mean, you know, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who are taking it pretty hard. But honestly, we need to unite. And this isn't a political show or anything, but, you know, it needs to come together. I just want him to see improve. So at this point, you know, it's whatever. President Obama, congratulations. And let's get it going.
Well, you know, and I'll just say this and then we'll move on to football. But the bottom line is this. He's everybody's president, and people have to respect it. You don't have to like it. You know, if Romney had won, he would have been my president too. And I was already on record to say that if Romney wins, I was getting involved in politics on some level. And you know, at this point, I don't really feel a need to. But you know, but you never know. You never know. But right now, I feel less of a need to than I would have if Romney had came in. So, but he, you know, he would have been my president too. You know, so I mean, that's what people have to understand. You know, and I agree with K-Star. I mean, you know, what I really don't understand, and I'll get off my soapbox. But this is to me what has gone on in parts of the country, including Florida, where people are standing in line hours and hours and hours. I mean, can you imagine how it must have felt to live in Florida, like Dade County, that stood in line for 5, 6, 7 hours and vote. And then ultimately, the presidency is decided and your vote wasn't even a part of that decision. I mean, Obama is going to be our president for 5 years. And last I knew, we still don't know who won Florida. So
yeah.
I stood in line for hours. And the presidency was decided, and my vote wasn't a part of that ultimate decision. Yeah, it'll be added in, and someone will get those electoral votes, but we already know. I mean, that's something that they have. It's something that has to be done about. And it's
they gotta get Florida. They gotta get those key states in earlier in the day. I don't know if they should pull it or do open the polls to them a day early or what, but that's really unfortunate. That sucks.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Any of those people who had to stay in line with prison in our ultimate.
Well, let me put it. One of the things I'm considering doing, and I've already registered the name on Blog Talk Radio, is doing a political show separate from the Madden Voice. And yes, you guessed it. It would be called The Political Voice. That's right. So stay tuned. That might be coming next. All right. So we got Week 10 coming up. Some teams have played 8 games and some have played 9, but we are in NFL Week 10. And so, you know, just to give everybody a feel for what's going on, we're going to start off with a live debate between K-Star and Dr. Train on who's going to win the Houston at Chicago game. And then K-Star gets to, and the Train can jump in on this too, but I'm going to make a case to the general public that Tony Romo is not the problem in Dallas, and I take offense to anyone who keeps saying that he is the problem, that Tony Romo is not the problem. And then we're going to touch on what's been a really hot topic, but Jerry Jones is as GM of the Cowboys and pretty much saying that he's going to stay GM, and get some conversation around perception versus reality as Jerry Jones is GM. We're then going to discuss who we think our midseason MVP is, and then we're going to review some games. So now, if you guys out there listening, we're probably going to go about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, depending on how deep we get into stuff. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready to be entertained as well as educated by the Madden Voice. You can call us at 347 8389525. 347-838-9525. If you're listening to us live on the internet, the browser is the chat room is open, so feel free to go into the chat room. And of course, you can tweet us by going to at the Madden Voice, and that's Twitter, and hashtag TMV if you think of it. That'd be great. And finally, if you're on Facebook, just shoot over to the Madden Voice Facebook page. You can put comments up there. And while you're there, go ahead and like the Madden Voice Facebook page so we can get off of 384. That's the number we're stuck on. And with the number of listeners we have, it's far more than 384. So, guys, do me a favor, okay? I appreciate the love and support. I know most of you have a Facebook page. Just take 5 minutes, log in, go to search, type in the Madden Voice. It'll pop up. You'll see our ever-familiar NFL player silhouette. And just like the page. I'd appreciate it. Now, hey, Train, do you remember? You don't say it, but do you remember who that silhouette is?
Oh, no, I do not. Let me take a look at it.
Okay. I don't think you could figure it out by looking at it, but I figured about maybe doing a little... Guess the silhouette. Get who is, you know, like Jerry West is the NBA icon, you know, the picture there and the NBA emblem. It's Jerry West.
Uh-huh.
And I know who ours is. I probably could find it, but I don't have the original picture, but I know who it is. And I'm thinking about maybe I could do a contest or something, and if someone can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me try this. Let's see what kind of response we get. Because in order to do a contest, people have to respond. We got a lot of listeners, but I get the sense that our listeners, a lot of them are podcasting, they're on their way to work or whatever. So if anyone is out there listening to the Madden Voice live or on archive, go to our Facebook page, look at our logo, or go to the website, themaddenvoice.com, look at our logo. And if you have a guess as to who the logo is, tweet it to me and hashtag TMV. Okay, tweet it to the Madden Voice. Let me just see how many responses we get. If we get a reasonable amount of responses, maybe we'll turn it into a contest. If we don't get it, then we won't. Okay, so we've got the 7-1 Houston Texans going into Chicago to play the 7-1 Chicago Bears. Game of the week, arguably the game of the year. And K-Star has volunteered to represent the Texans. Now, I don't know if he necessarily is picking the Texans or if he's just going to state the case for the Texans. We already know that Dr. Train is going to pick the Bears, and this will be one of our Week 10 picks as well. So let's start with K-Star as to why, and you can let us all know, do you really believe this or are you just making the case, but why the Houston Texans will beat the Chicago Bears on Sunday?
Well, the reason why the Houston Texans will beat the Chicago Bears on Sunday is because they have the best rush attack in the NFL. They have two of the best players that's going to be on the football field on Sunday. They have Arian Foster and that offensive line who just steamrolled through everyone. They run on every single defense they play. Whenever you see Arian Foster, you know he's guaranteed to get over 100 yards rushing. That is what they do. You know that Matt Schaub's going to make plays through the air. And more importantly, you know that number two ranked Houston defense was going to give Jay Cutler a lot of problems. You see, Matt Schaub is a very very consistent quarterback, especially as far as it goes with turnovers. He has not turned the ball over on 3 in the year. He's a guy who, again, hands it off to Arian Foster, plays some pretty solid football, throws a deep on slash and rollouts, and he's not going to make those mistakes. Now, when you look at Jay Cutler, however, this is a guy who's prone to making turnovers in the game. He had 4 against Green Bay in week 2. He is a guy who, when playing man-to-man coverage and with the pass rush that the Texans do need to have, is a guy who struggles. So when you think of J.J. Watt versus anyone on that offensive line, that's a mismatch. And the Chicago Bears' best weapon outside of Matt Forte is a guy named Brandon Marshall. Now, he's been picking on DBs all season, but let me tell you about a guy who can defend him, Jonathan Joseph. Now, remember that name because on Sunday night, you're going to see him locked in man-to-man coverage with Brandon Marshall, and he's a shutdown cornerback. And, again, with that pass rush and that Bears' weak offensive line, you're going to see the Bears and Jay Cutler make a lot of mistakes. Meanwhile, the Texans control the ball at the line of scrimmage.
Okay. Train, and I appreciate K-Star staying to about 90 seconds. So, Train, if you can do the same, keep it to about 90 seconds and make your case.
Okay, I'll do my best. First of all, why Chicago will win this game? We're at home. We don't falter at home. That's first and foremost. But let's highlight some things that are really big about Chicago. And I'm simply going to start with the heart of the team, and that's the defense. Chicago has a plus 16 turnover margin. Plus 16. That's what we do. That's what we do to every team. I don't care how safe a team thinks it is with protecting the ball. Chicago is all about takeaways, forcing the turnover, fumble, interception, whatever it takes to get that ball. The defense does it, and they do it pretty well. They are the best in the league at doing it, regardless of who their opponent is. That's first and foremost. I mean, the matchup as far as Foster being able to run the ball, I will not take anything away from Foster. But Chicago knows that's the first thing they need to stop. And I'm pretty sure Foster will be the number one target on their radar. So we no concern with there is concern with the run, but they stop Foster, they force Matt Shaw off the pass, now the defense can really go to work. That's what you will see. That's exactly what you will see on Sunday. Now, if you flip to the offensive side, yeah, we have our vulnerabilities, but let's understand, like I said last night, the offense is a wild card. You have no clue what's going to show up. And if they show up, it's going to be a tough game. We have both Matt Forte and Michael Bush running the ball. Matt Forte has a very high yards per carry as far as running the ball. And then Cullen and Marshall, Marshall right now is the second best receiver in the league as far as yards and stats. So with that said, and us being at home with a dominating defense, it's gonna be a tough night for Houston, but it will definitely be a good game to watch. That's why Chicago win this game.
Okay. K-Star, do you have anything to retort? Or, you know, I'll give you 30 seconds if you want to retort.
Yeah, real quick. Again, Arian Foster, they're going to be looking for the line of scrimmage. I know Chicago wants to sell out, stop the run, and they've been doing it against everyone else, but this is number one rush attack in the NFL. This is very hard to do. This is a team in which imposes as well on both sides of the ball. And with Chicago's offensive line being beer weak, I just don't see how they can defend or how they can stop J.J. Watt from being all over Jay Cutler. That, to me, is the mismatch. That is what the Texans hone in on. And they have a guy for Brandon Marshall for when Cutler doesn't have enough time to the ball anywhere. So I like the Texans, man. They look, it's going to be a good game, though.
Case Train, 30 seconds.
Real quickly, you nullify J.J. Watt by putting more than one person on him. You chip block him. You do whatever, you slow him down. No different. That's what you do to good pass rushers. Okay? Secondly, to nullify the pass rush, you run the ball well, which Chicago can do. They can run the ball well. They have two monster running backs to do it with. So with that said, on the flip side of the defense is they stop. The first thing they do is stop the run. They're going to stop the run and put all the pressure on Matt Shaw. And, yes, they may run play action, but we have a very disciplined defense, and everyone gets to the ball. Charles Pittman said it himself. They do the simple things very, very well, the simple things, basic fundamentals of defense.
Okay. I think you guys both make good points. I really can't pick a winner of the debate and this game. I mean, it's a very evenly matched game. My thoughts are, I know Chicago is very good at stopping the run. I don't know that Chicago has seen a 1-2 punch like Foster and Tate. But on the flip side, I don't know that Houston has seen a physical wide receiver like a Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall is just getting off this year. And so I think they're going to offset. To be honest, I don't like either quarterback overall. I just am not sold on either guy, big picture, but they're both playing very well. They both have 12 touchdowns. Shab maybe have an edge statistically, a little bit higher completion percentage, a little bit more yards. But
less picks.
But that home field advantage, you know, so it's a close game. If I had to, I'd have to say my opinion. I've got to give a slight edge to the Bears, because not only do they have a defense that's equal to the Houston Texans defense, but as long as you have a defense that gets turnovers and get points off their turnovers like Chicago's been doing this year, it's hard to go against that if everything else is equal. If we say the quarterbacks are a wash, if we say Matt Forte and Michael Bush are about as effective as Arian Foster and Ben Tate, okay? If we say Andre Johnson and Brandon Marshall is a wash, okay? If we say that they both have very good defenses, then to me, the one thing Chicago has shown that they can do is score defensively. And they've done it enough where you can no longer say it's a fluke. So for that reason, I would have to give the Bears just an edge, but I expect this to be a heck of a game. And, you know, to me, it with no disrespect to Atlanta, I fully expect Atlanta to go down to New Orleans, and we'll talk about that, but I fully expect the Saints to beat the Falcons, and I'm dead serious about that. This game could be for the best team in the NFL. This game here, if Atlanta loses, which I expect Atlanta to lose to the Saints, then I say the winner of this game becomes the undisputed best team in the NFL at 8-1, because you'll have two teams at 8-1, and I'd say this game here, this team becomes the best. So you know, Train, your Bears could be in line to be considered the best team in the NFL. Did you ever think we'd be saying that this year?
Honestly, no. I felt Chicago had a good team. I knew we'd be competitive, but no. To be saying the best team, if I was to say that, I would have been saying even like later than now. I wouldn't expect it to come soon because I knew we were implementing a new offense, but it was very similar to what was under Mike Marks. But the defense, like honestly, I mean, I knew we had a good defense, but this defense was playing better than I expected.
Yeah. All right. So this really. You know, we're gonna talk. I'm gonna end this Tony Romo bullshit, okay? And I don't. K-Star can respond. Train can respond. Caller can call in and respond. Someone in the chat room can respond. I don't really care, but I am tired of what I've been hearing. You know, I call. You know what really motivated this more than anything else, more than even K-Star, was when I logged on to NFL.com and it said the Three Stooges, and it had Philip Rivers, Tony Romo, and Michael Vick. And I said, it's so disrespectful. It's so disrespectful.
I'm sorry, Steve.
it's completely disrespectful. You know, and I'm going to start with the career. Okay, I'm going to start with the career. Now, at the beginning of the year, obviously, I made it very well known that Tony Romo had the number two passer rater of all time at the beginning of the year. This has not been a good year for Tony Romo. Okay, let's just put it out there. I'm not convinced words. This is not Tony Romo. But with that said, even with this year not being a great year for Tony Romo, and this is minimum 1,500 passing attempts. That's what the NFL uses, okay? He's still the number five ranked all-time passer. Number one right now is Aaron Rodgers, all-time, okay? Number two is Steve Young. Number three is Tom Brady. And number four is Peyton Manning. And number five is Tony Romo, okay? Ben Roethlisberger is number nine. Just put it out there.
Oh, please. Oh, God.
No, don't interrupt me. Let me finish. Don't interrupt me, okay? So we're going to talk career. That's career. Okay, that's career. The other thing I want to say is, yes, this year he's not having a good year, 82.2. But when you talk about replacing a franchise quarterback, you don't replace a franchise quarterback because he's having one bad season. This is what his passer ratings were each year, 102.5. This is the NFL, not QBR, NFL, 102.5, 94.9, 97.6, 91.4, 97.4, 95.1. This is the first year that his passer rating has been under 90. Now, you say, okay, let's compare that. Let's start with, Ben Roethlisberger. Third year, 75.4. Fifth year, 80.1. Last year, 90.1. Okay? So, you know, when you talk about replacing somebody, teams win, players play. So Romo's job is to play and perform. The case that I am making is he's doing his job. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. Does he make mistakes? Absolutely so. No doubt about it. But should he be replaced? No. Let's look at Drew Brees, who has a 94.1 career passer rating. His second year, 76.9. His third year, 67.2. His fifth year, 89.2. His seventh year, 89.4. Okay? Granted, he was in San Diego, but that was because of the arm injury. Okay? Even that year, he had an 89.2. Okay? So if he had never had that arm injury, dare I say, he'd probably still be with San Diego. So, franchise quarterback, right? You stick by your franchise quarterback who is performing, and you put a team around him. Let's look at Brett Favre, the guy that Tony Romo is compared to the most. Okay, second to the last year, 2006. His last year in Green Bay was 2007. He had a 95.7 passer rating. Before that, it was 72.7, 70.9, 2 years in a row. Okay. And I won't even go through. The guy played for 20 years. A lot of, you know, and his lifetime passer rating is 86.0. This is a guy who leads the most career interceptions ever, 3 MVPs, and 1 Super Bowl. Okay? Most interceptions ever. You like to talk about how Romo's got 13 interceptions this year, which is an anomaly. It's not the indicator of who he is. It is this year. But let me look at just one more. Let me look at the great, great – oh, I already looked at him. Never mind. I was going to look at Peyton Manning, but I already looked at Peyton Manning. Never mind. Let's talk about this year. Everybody wants to talk about 13 interceptions. K-Star, he's got 13 interceptions. Leads the league in 13 interceptions. Let me remind you that of those 13 interceptions, 9 came in 2 games. 2 games. So the other 6 games, 4 interceptions. That's less than 1 interception a game. Okay? So 9 came into, we're going to bench him. We're going to remove him, put Kyle Orton in, because 9 came in 2 games. And in one of those games, they almost won. I mean, by all accounts, everyone who was watching say, just as I heard how the Steelers whooped up on the Giants, although the Giants were up 20-10 in that game. But anyway, the Cowboys outplayed those Giants, even with all those mistakes, and should have won that game. And we're going to blame Romo? I don't understand. He is 7th in completion percentage. He is 6th in yards. He is tied for 9th for average per attempt. 5th in yards per game. Interceptions? What am I missing here? I didn't put that. I don't know what that stat was.
How about wins?
I'm not there yet. Can I finish talking? He's got 10 interceptions. He's tied with 5 quarterbacks who have 10 interceptions, including 10 touchdowns. 10 touchdowns. You know who else has 10 touchdowns? Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco has 10 touchdowns. Give me a second. I lost my place here. And he's been sacked 14 times, which is tied for 23rd. Which you don't want to be first, you want to be near the end. So what I'm saying is that people look and say, interceptions, you got to get rid of Romo. But let's look at the whole body work. He needs playmakers around him. He needs people that can get the job done. And Mr. K-Star, who likes to say, what about wins? Well, the last that I knew, there's 22 guys on the field responsible for winning that game. There's a coaching staff responsible for managing the game to put people in position to win. And the quarterback's job is to drive and attempt to put points on the board. But other than that bootleg that he did on the Giants where he ran in, he needs a little bit of help. His job is not to single-handedly play against 11 guys. And so let's look at, don't sit there and just take a number out of context, like 13 interceptions and 3 wins, and say he's got to go. And let's not take into consideration he's had a patchwork offensive line all year. That's a fact, including a starting center that's been out. DeMarco Murray has been out. Felix Jones has been hurt. That's a fact. Remember Jason Witten coming back from a lacerated spleen. Dez Bryant, hip injury, groin injury. These are facts. He needs his players to perform and do well. And oh, when the Cowboys finally did get in the end zone and they had finally figured out the best team in the NFL, it was not Romo that couldn't get it done. It was the defense that couldn't make a play three times in a row against Atlanta. So people have to stop just picking small things out of the air and saying, Romo threw four picks. Bench him. Wait a minute. He also brought that team back to 24-23. He led that team back to 24-23. He threw the pass that Dez Bryant couldn't stay in bounds that would have won the game. Oh, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. He drove him down against Baltimore. And freaking Jason Garrett couldn't figure out how to manage the clock so they can get one more play, and it's not a 51-yard field goal. There are reasons things happen. And to sit there, and we've said it on this show before, the quarterback, when he wins, he gets too much credit, and when he loses, he gets too much blame. I submit to anyone that has any football acumen that Tony Romo is a very good quarterback. And what is happening is the guys around him, more times than not, are not getting it done. If they had the resiliency of Tony Romo, you're going to make a mistake. Everybody makes a mistake. But how do you respond? How do you rebound? How do you recover from that mistake? And I've seen time and time again, Tony throws a pick. He comes back, gets him in the end zone. Tony takes a sack for a loss or something happens. He comes back. He makes a play with his feet. He moves around in the pocket. He scrambles for a first down. The guy doesn't quit. He is a winner. He is not the problem. The problem is he doesn't have a Drew Pearson and a Tony Dorsett. He doesn't have a Michael Irvin and an Emmitt Smith. He's got guys that want to be there wearing the numbers, but these guys aren't getting the job done. And when these guys step up and can get the job done and aren't dropping passes and fumbling punt returns and fumbling, catching the ball and running like Miles Office and Miles Austin and getting stripped and Kevin Ogletee dropping third down passes. I mean, this is the facts of what is happening in the game. So I ask everybody, watch a freaking game and then come talk to me. Don't just read a stat line and say, oh, the guy's got to go. Watch the game. And you'll see what I see. And you'll realize Cowboys got problems. But it's not Tony Romo. I rest my case.
Done?
Hey, you're done.
Are you done? All I heard was a lot of excuses, a lot of explanations. You can kind of reference where that came from. Listen. The fact of the matter is, well, we're going to focus on this season here because right now the Cowboys are 3-5, and this is the only year that I can remember in which talks of Tony Romo possibly be benched have ever come up legitimately.
Who's bringing it up?
You're interrupting me. I can't interrupt you. Can I go? Can I continue? Listen, Bill Cowher brought this up last week on Showtime's Inside the NFL. He had actually referenced Michael Vick. They're talking about Tony Romo. And he has said that with Dallas, he would seriously consider benching Tony Romo for Kyle Orton because of the turnovers. Now, when you take a look at it, the Dallas Cowboys have the 26th-ranked scoring offense. He's not getting it done. He's not putting points on the board. And he leads the league in interceptions. He's turning the ball over at a more frequent rate than any quarterback in the NFL. You look at Dallas, and this defense is actually playing really good this season. And anyway, we're focusing on this season. Can I finish? Hold on.
I gave you facts. Now you're spewing rhetoric. Do not lie. He does not turn the ball.
Rhetoric? That's a 26-ranked. What I say that's not true. He's a 26-ranked scoring offense, averaging 18.8 points a game. What did I say? Is he not leading the league in interceptions?
Turnovers. You said he turned the ball over more than any quarterback in the NFL. Michael Vick has that distinction. Get your facts straight.
Okay, argue semantics. He leads league interceptions. There you go. There you go. Nonetheless, they're not putting points on the board. This is a guy who's thrown the most interceptions in the NFL this season. And Dallas happens to have the sixth-ranked defense in the NFL. I'm sorry. Like, you look at it and you just see a problem. You see a problem this season in which a Hall of Fame coach, because it's always the coach's fault, it's always the player's fault, but you have a Hall of Fame coach in Bill Carrion sit here and say that the Cowboys are seriously looking considering benching Tony Romo because this guy's just ball over too frequently. And, again, with the way that Dallas defense is playing, maybe the Kyle wouldn't give him a spark. That's the first time I've ever heard someone say, legitimately, the possibly bench Tony Romo, that franchise quarterback. Now, you also happen to call Tony Romo a winner. That is the most illegitimate statement I've ever heard referenced about Tony Romo. Tony Romo is not a winner. He's only been in the playoffs 3 times. His record's 1-2. That's
60% of his starts he wins. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't 60%.
He's been to the playoffs 3 times. Is that a fact? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And he's 1-2 in the playoffs.
Yep. 1-2 in the playoffs, losing playoff record. Cool.
Yep.
Now again, this season, this man is turning the ball over, throwing the ball to the other team more than anyone else in the NFL. So when you look at it and you look again, it's always someone else's fault. There's injuries with every single freaking team in the NFL. You know, Andrew Luck's been sacked 5 more times than Tony Romo has as a rookie. He's got a better record. He's getting it done with T.Y. Hilton's of the world, with the Donnie Avery's. I'm not trying to hear it. These excuses are ridiculous. It's so Teflon with Tony Romo. It's someone else's fault. I'm tired of it.
All right. So, first of all, I'm going to correct you again and stop misquoting facts. Tony Romo leads the NFL in interceptions. That is correct. He does not turn the ball over more than any quarterback in the NFL. So stop lying. That is not true. That distinction goes to Michael Vick. That is a fact. Okay? So if you're going to come and
you're already corrected me on that,
You said it again. Okay? Secondly, if we're going to debate, then that means I bring information to prove my point. Don't give me that garbage about no excuses. Then we can't have a conversation then. Then we can't ever have a debate. Because when you talk about Ben being better than Tom Brady, did you not bring information to back your claim? So I'm bringing information that happens to be all factual to back my claim. You can disagree, but don't tell me that I'm making excuses. The difference between what you're saying and what I'm saying is when a team loses, the team loses. Now, if you want to sit there and put it on Romo because your Hall of Fame coach said so, well, you can go ahead and hang out with Bill Cowher in the showers and swap spit. That's your boy. I don't have to listen to Bill Cowher. He doesn't mean anything to me. His opinion is not relevant to me. It doesn't matter. When Jerry Jones starts talking about it or Jason Garrett starts talking about it, then I'm going to pay attention. But there is nobody that has any decision-making ability here. Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones have emphatically said Romo is our quarterback. So do not now come and say, oh, well, now there's talk about benching Romo. No, there is not. That's Bill Cowher trying to get attention because we know if you talk about Dallas, you get attention. And dare I say, Bill Cowher is still because he got his butt kicked in the one Super Bowl that he coached against the Dallas Cowboys back in 1995, where he had a very good quarterback sitting on the bench, Slash, who to this day resents Bill Cowher for not giving him a chance to be the starter, and instead he had Neil O'Donnell, are you kidding me, as his starting quarterback. Neil, I'm going to throw 2 interceptions to Larry Brown, O'Donnell. Larry Brown? I will even say, who the hell is Larry Brown? And he threw 2 picks right to Larry Brown. And you're going to sit here and tell me that coach, who his Super Bowl starting quarterback threw 2 gimmies to Larry Brown and blew the game, has the acumen to now say that Tony Romo should be benched? Are you kidding me?
Bill Cowher didn't play quarterback. This is asinine. So you're going to kill the messenger, a Hall of Fame coach, rather than pay attention to the message, which is the fact of the matter is the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, Tony Romo, leads the league in interceptions, And the fact of the matter is, listen, no, stop. This is ridiculous. You're sitting there trying to sit here, Bill Cowher has me sending towards the Cowboys. That is not true. They had asked him a question on Inside the NFL on which quarterback they consider seriously benching, and if any. And he said, I'll consider benching Tony Romo. And he has stated the same thing I had, that while leading league interceptions with a defense playing so well, with them not putting up points on the board on the second half of the league, like it's that is why, that is his reason which he would, why he would do it. So if you want to sit here and listen to Jason Garrett, which is fine, no one's sitting here saying he's going to be benched. I don't think he's ever going to be benched. No one said it's going to happen. But the fact of the matter is, this play has come to question this much this year with this much scrutiny. I mean, it's warranted. That is all I'm saying, that it is warranted.
Oh, I never said, see, now you're putting words in my mouth. I never said scrutiny wasn't warranted. When a team is 3-5, everyone on the team is subject to be scrutinized. I don't have a problem with the scrutiny. But when it goes to the point where you're taking somebody who is a very good player. Last year I said elite, and I meant elite. This year he is not playing at an elite level. See, I can be real about my team. I'm not K-Star. I can be real about my team. I can admit that Romo is having a subpar year. But it is asinine. It is ludicrous. It is downright ridiculous when you look at a guy with a 95 career passer rating, 65% career completion percentage, and you're going to say, because he's having a rough year, let's bench him. Are you kidding me? Bench him. It's just ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And when we know what's going on that team, I watch the games. Does Bill Cowher watch the games? I doubt it. He looks at the stat line and he says, I think we should just bench Tony Romo. I watch every single game, up close and personal. And
I'm sure Bill Cowher did no homework when he went to this. He just looked at the stat sheet.
I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure he looked at the stats and said, Romo. I'm sure he didn't.
No, that's what you're doing, actually. You're only going to the core record. That's all you are doing. You're not going to win losses. It's always something. If someone's hurt, listen, there are injuries in every single locker room in the NFL. My point is, there's a lot of cores playing behind bad offensive lines. I gave you for an example. A rookie at that, which should work to your advantage, because Tony Romo's been in the league for, what, 7 seasons now? Maybe even longer than that. So, again, I'm simply saying this season that you have to point your finger at Tony Romo. He is part of the problem. He's a big part of the problem. When you're not putting points on the board and you're throwing interceptions, that's pretty significant.
Now, let me just say one thing, and I want you to hear me clearly, K-Star. Your bias towards Dallas judges your objectivity, because if this was flipped around and this was Ben, you'd be spewing about his history and his 2 Super Bowls, and you'd be saying, are you kidding me? You're not going to bench Ben because he's in a rough spot. We're going to work through it, and we're going to make this happen, and Ben's going to be okay? And I'd be agreeing with you. I'd say with Ben's history, yes, you stick by him. I'm saying the same thing about Tony Romo. Don't make me have to recite his – you know, everyone wants to say he's 1-2 in the playoffs, but no one wants to look at what he's had to work with for the 7 years that he's been the starter. No one wants to look at, you know, and you want to talk about Andrew Luck? Listen, that is so not a fair comparison. 2 reasons. First and foremost, that team over there is playing for a cause that you and I could only hope to understand, okay? And when you have a cause like that behind you, when you have your coach go down to leukemia, and you're playing for him, there's a level of motivation there that the average person just cannot understand. Similar to when the Saints were playing for the city Katrina. There's certain intangibles that come into sports that you can't ignore. I wouldn't bet against Indianapolis at all. I wouldn't bet, because those boys are playing for a cause that nobody can understand. We can't relate to that. Okay, so let's also remember that Andrew Luck is not an undrafted free agent. He's a number one draft pick, okay? And you keep talking about him like he came off the street. Tony Romo came off the street. Miles Austin came off the street. And these guys have excelled to an upper echelon in the NFL. But they didn't come in with that pedigree and yet have performed at that level. So let's not disrespect what these guys have done on the field. What I'm saying to you, K-Star, is when you look at your Steelers and the struggles that they were having, I heard you talk about, well, you know, we don't have Troy and we don't have James Harrison and we don't have Rashard Mendenhall. And, you know, I mean, when we get healthy, look out. That's what I heard you saying when you guys were 2-3 and you were struggling. You lost to Tennessee. boy, I really wish we had this player and that player. So it's okay when it's the Steelers. But when I say the Cowboys don't have their starting center and their offensive line is banged up and people have been injured, all of a sudden I'm making excuses. It's not an issue. It's the reality of the game. It comes into play. So instead of just dumping it all on the quarterback and saying he sucks, bench him, all I'm saying is there are circumstances that are affecting his ability to get it done. Has he been perfect? Absolutely not. Has he had problems? Absolutely. Has there been some misjudgments? Yes, absolutely. Are there issues with Tony Romo's play? Hear me clearly. Yes. Benching him, though? Ridiculous. Ludicrous. Insane. And if this was any other team and any other situation, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't be having this discussion. But because it's Dallas, and it's the star, and it's America's team, and everyone wants to talk about, oh, no, Romo and Tony Homo, because people love to hate Dallas. That's why we're having this conversation. Train, I'm going to let you in here.
Hey, you know, like playing double dutch. I kept getting smacked with the rope. Look, I think that notion is ridiculous, to mention a starting quarterback. And there's one simple reason for it. Kyle Orton isn't better than Tony Romo. If he was, they'd have done it already. If he was, he'd have been the starting quarterback from the beginning of the season. He's not better than Tony Romo at the quarterback position for the Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo knows that often. They know they need to improve, but to pin it all on the quarterback is asinine. Yeah, the defense is playing better this year. Where was the defense last year when Tony Romo was playing out of his mind? No one ever brings that up. But this year, all of a sudden, you need to be replaced because the defense is playing well. But the defense was the crush last season. And it's good that the defense is playing well. But the defense has also played well and also has had letdowns. In the Chicago game specifically, the defense had a lot of letdowns because Chicago eventually broke through. And they had letdowns in other games where they slipped. I mean, when you have to put up 30 points, when your offense has to put up 30 points for you to win a game, that's not good defense. Yeah, let's get one thing straight. The NFL rates top defenses by yards, which I think is like
ridiculous. I went off scoring with my assist. That's what all
no,
matters.
No, let me. No, you went off scoring off offense. You didn't go off scoring off defense. There's a big difference. So let's look at the defense. Look at the fact that the NFL rates defense by yards. That's ridiculous. Because at the end of the day, if you don't get in the end zone, if you don't put any points on the board, your team doesn't win. So it makes sense that defense should be rated by points allowed. Because if your defense isn't allowing any points, then the other team has a tougher time beating you. So if we flip this and just look at the defense, let's look at some of the problems with the defense this year. Yeah, they are stopping teams from getting up and down the field like crazy like they did last year. But at the same time, Tony Romo and the offense still has to put up damn near 30 points to win a game. You don't want that night in and night out. If your defense is really dominating, they got a good defense, but it isn't dominating. Not as much as it could do. Now the offense has its problems. But to me, when I've seen them play, it looks like communication more than anything. Tony Romo throws the ball left, receiver go right. That's crazy. If somebody's not practicing it, somebody's not doing something. But I pin that on everyone on the offense. And it's true enough. The healthy team will compete the longest. The healthy team will tend to have the better record. And between DeMarco Murray and the rest of the running backs on that team, it is a complete drop-off. It is a huge drop-off. Because those guys cannot do what DeMarco Murray does at the running back position. Now, as far as the right, he has the other talent. He has his wide receivers. But your offense will struggle when you can't run the ball effectively. So now that they are without DeMarco Murray, now the offense has to find other ways to put up 30 points. So you can't even depend on your run game to help you put up the 30 points. You got to go straight pass. Dude, so to sit here and say, get rid of Tony Romo to replace him with Kyle Orton, and that will fix your problems. That doesn't make sense.
Let me make two points. The first point is K-Star is saying about Bill Cowher being a Hall of Fame coach, and he would bench Tony Romo. Let me just say that Jimmy Johnson is a Hall of Fame coach. Jimmy Johnson has one more Super Bowl than Bill Cowher. Okay, Jimmy Johnson also has a couple of national championships in college. Okay, and Jimmy Johnson has said repeatedly that Tony Romo is not the problem in Dallas. Okay, so if we can, if you're gonna talk to your boy who's a Steeler, then let me refer you back. Watch the Fox pregame show. And when he brings up, he adamantly said Tony Romo is not the problem. Troy Aikman, three Super Bowls, has said Tony Romo is not the problem. Roger Staubach.
The four Cowboys, Deion Sanders, Michael Irvin, they're not on board with Tony Romo. Like, not everyone is pandering to this man. I mean, Deion Sanders won a Super Bowl in Dallas. Michael Irvin, I mean, it's not everyone.
Yeah, I know. Everybody won a Super Bowl in Dallas, and that's something. And let me make my second point. When they compare him to Michael Vick, and Michael Vick is they're looking at Vick and saying maybe Vick should be benched, okay? Vick is near the bottom of the league in rating. Vick doesn't even have 60% pass completions, okay? Vick's numbers, when you're looking at performance, and he leads the league in turnovers, period, okay? And so it's not even a – even though both teams are 3-5 and both teams are underachieving – I wouldn't bench either one of them. I want to be on record to say I don't think Nick Foles, whatever his name is, gives Philly a better chance to win than Michael Vick. I don't.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Right. And so I think at the end of the day, it comes down to who is going to give your quarterback a better chance to win. And there's no way. And Kyle Orton, he just doesn't have – he wasn't brought in for that. He doesn't have you know, Mark Sanchez, number 30th ranked quarterback in the league, and he's still playing. And Rex Ryan has come right out and said, he's my quarterback. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. Okay, the things that Dallas needs to focus on are the pieces and the components around Tony Romo. And I would include Jason Garrett in that discussion. I would definitely include Jason Garrett in that discussion.
Yeah.
But Romo is not the problem.
They need to put points on the board this season. They haven't done it. I mean, it's just point blank. It doesn't really matter who you want to blame on that offense, but it's pretty negative.
I mean, yeah, of course they do, K-Stop. But wouldn't you agree, wouldn't you also agree that if your offense has to score 30, that that's a problem?
Absolutely. But a lot of the reasons why you find so many points on the scoreboard is because of pick sixes that have happened. How many pick sixes have the Cowboys had this year? Three? Four? Three or four? How many?
Two, and they were both against Chicago.
No, they had one against the Giants as well, JPP. I remember that.
That's right. And what do you
think? That was just a great play.
But again, if you want to look at football as an analyst, you're going to sit there and pin that on Romo? That was a hell of a play. I mean, JPP made a heck of a play there.
Dude.
I just said that. So my point is, the reason why some of these numbers are skewed as far as defense goes is because they've had quite a few pick sixes. I mean, Dallas, for instance, the Cowboys held the Falcons to 16 points in Atlanta. You know, it hasn't just been the Cowboys getting a bunch of points. No, that defense is playing at a very high level all season.
I don't disagree. The team needs to score points. I don't disagree with that. But I'm not going to sit here and say that means Romo should be benched. Does Romo need to pick up his play and get back to the level that he had last year? Absolutely. And can he do it? Absolutely. But you can't sit here and say Romo when he's on and Orton when he's on, I'm going to go with Kyle Orton. It doesn't make sense.
Now, here's another point that people fail to bring up. And I think I think you just kick the other teams in the teeth when you don't bring this as a reason for the Dallas struggling this season. Has anybody ever taken a look at their first eight games? Have y'all actually taken a look at who they played?
Yeah.
Every team that they played, with the exception of Carolina, is in the playoff hunt. Every team that they played is in the exception of Cap. First eight games, it's a possible playoff team. You discredit those teams when you just blame it on Tony Romo instead of giving credit to the teams that played defense against Dallas. They played some tough teams and against some tough defenses. It hasn't been a walk in the park for them. we even said this. Even T pointed out before the season started when we did our preseason show that Dallas, first half of their schedule, was going to be tough, very tough.
Most Cowboy fans thought that at this point, if the team was 4-5, or I'm sorry, 3-5 now, we wanted to be 4-4 at this point, looking at the schedule. And going into Philly at 4-4 gave us a fighting chance. That's what realistically most Cowboy fans that were being honest about, you know, who we were playing, thought that at this point 4-4 would be reasonable. 3-5 means we're one game off of that. And when you look at the fact that, and I'm not making excuses because I do agree with K-Star when he says the team needs to get it done and the points need to, we need to get back to scoring some points. I agree with that. I just, my issue with people saying bench Romo, it's just ridiculous. But when you look at three games that came down to a matter of a play, and that's how the NFL works. I understand that as well as anybody. But this team is, you know, a hand of 2 inches, a field goal of 2 feet, and a tackle maybe away from being maybe 6-2, 5-3. It's not asinine to say this team was very close to being a 5-3 team, possibly 6-2. But it didn't work out, and so now we're ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Now we're ready to say it's Romo and let's bench him. If the team, you know, there was some games I saw when Wade Phillips was coaching, one game against Green Bay, and the team looked like they just gave up. If I saw that 8 games in a row, oh, yeah, heads would need to roll. But that's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing productivity. I'm seeing a lack of communication, and when it's crunch time, it's not getting done, and I really think we have to look at the head coach and possibly even the general manager owner. That's where my focus is. On that note, we're going to stick with the Cowboys. One more topic with the Cowboys, and then we're going to talk about some games. But there was a discussion on First Take, and it was referencing an interview that was done with Bob Costas and Jerry Jones. And a simple question was asked, and I tried to get the audio in time for the show, but had some things come up, so I couldn't get the audio. But the short story is Jerry Jones was asked if the GM was not Jerry Jones, or in this case, since the GM is Jerry Jones, would owner Jerry Jones fire GM Jerry Jones? And Jerry Jones said, yes, I would, simply because he's not getting it done as a general manager. He then later came back and clarified, saying, but I am the owner, and I can't imagine owning the team and not being the final decision maker when it comes to player personnel decisions. So, yes, I will remain the GM as long as I'm the owner. Now, I have a personal belief that Stephen Jones, who was his son, may slide in and really does a lot to try to help Jerry Jones. And I have a personal belief that we may see more of Stephen Jones in some capacity, but it's family, so we won't dwell on that. But the question that was asked is, should Jerry Jones go out and get a GM? And I'm going to start with Train.
You know, the simple answer to me would be yes. I mean, I think it would work better for a person that's fully focused on doing just that, fully focused on bringing in the proper management and the proper talent that you need and has your same vision in place, just systematically, yes. But, I mean, realistically, man, to be honest, it's his team. It's his toy. So he can do what he wants with it. But when you look at him being in a GM position, I mean, he has done, to me, a decent job of getting talent that the Cowboys has needed. Now, they're still probably missing some pieces. I mean, everybody could use a very good, you know, some more guys in the trenches. you know, really when you when I think of Dallas pass rush, I mean, only big name that stands out is Ware. I don't really think of anybody outside of Ware. Everybody says Anthony Spencer, but you don't hear his name called when it comes to getting to the quarterback. All you hear is Ware. So he needs another pass rusher. He needs somebody down there in the trenches. So, I mean, then you talk about the linebacker. I mean, you said it yourself. You mentioned when Sean Lee went out, you knew that was going to hurt. And it did because Michael Turner went off. I mean, linebacker's responsibility, if anything, is this. They're very important in stopping the run. Well, they're definitely missing Sean Lee. So you definitely need maybe some more talent at linebacker, some more talent at the offensive
line. Bruce Carr looks really good to me. Bruce Carr looks really good.
I mean, yeah, but let me just finish up real quick. But, you know, having someone else in that position to do it, I think that's the way to go. I think that's the way to do it. But at the same time, I also don't think that Jerry Jones has done a bad job at it. I think if he's had say-so with the picks that they brought in, then he's done decent to bring in some talent, both offensively and defensively.
Okay, Star.
Real quick, I just want to ask Train this question. So, overall, you see that Jerry Jones has done a good job the last 5 or 6 seasons as GM?
Say that again, what I said, what now?
Did you say that you felt that Jerry Jones has been a good general manager the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever?
I would say decent. I mean, Dallas has gotten, to me, bringing in talent has gotten better.
Yeah. You know, it's tough because, first of all, Jerry has the right to be the general manager. He does on the Cowboys. Let's be very clear there. But he's not doing a good job. Like, if it's not, I'm just going to follow your beliefs here, T, since you're the Cowboys fan. If it's not Romo, you know, then either has to be either the coaching or Jerry Jones at this point. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Cowboys do have some pretty talented players and have some pretty talented rosters. For quite a bit. So I don't think he's necessarily done a bad job as the general manager because I feel like, again, the Cowboys have had some pretty, you know, talented football teams. But if they're not having any success, then he would have to go. In any other situation, Jerry Jones was in Dallas. So Jerry Jones was just a regular GM. Anyone else would have been fired by now because of all the talent that they've, you know, accumulated. And there's a reason why a lot of people have picked the Cowboys over the years to do well. So I don't know if he can detach himself from the situation and truly just be a successful general manager because he is owner. I just don't think it works anymore. It's too much work.
Well, I think you're right in one aspect. It is a moot conversation because Jerry Jones is going to stay the GM. I think that when I look at, I mean, it was funny because Darren Woodson, who I respect, he has 3 Super Bowls with the Cowboys. Like I said, everybody's got Super Bowls with the Cowboys. And he said he doesn't think the roster is as talented as everyone gives him credit for. He thinks that, and I understand where he's coming from, that when you build a team, you start with the offensive and defensive line and build out, and that this team is talented in the skill positions. The offensive line has been patchwork for years, which is true, and the defensive line outside of Jay Ratliff, really hasn't been much to talk about, which is true. And so he questions the level of talent. And so I would say this. I think Jerry Jones he brings in talent into this team. Is his philosophy sound? If you look at the record of the team, you'd have to question it. But, you know, let's look at current events. Okay, Star likes to talk about now. We don't want to talk about history. So Dallas had a very productive offense last year. And so the draft, they drafted 7 players. 6 were defensive players. They went and got the number one ranked defensive player in the draft with Maurice Claiborne. They signed Brandon Carter, $50 million deal. They got rid of Terrence Newman. Mike Jenkins is a first-round draft pick. They brought in Bruce Carter is now in his second year. You know, they went out and got Dan Connor. You know, they've done a lot on defense, and we can all agree that the defense is playing better than it was last year. And yet the offense is now stuttering and puttering. I can't blame that on Jerry Jones. I can't. You know, he did what a general manager should do. He said, okay, we have players that aren't getting it done. I'm going to go get players that are getting it done. And now here you guys go. Now it's your job to coach these players and get it done. And so I would say I don't have a problem with Jerry Jones as a general manager. I've never had a problem with Jerry Jones as a general manager. I am becoming concerned with Jason Garrett as a head coach. And I'm wondering if Bill Callahan, who did take the Oakland Raiders to a Super Bowl and is the offensive line coach and has the title of offensive coordinator but doesn't call plays, I'm beginning to wonder if Jason Garrett needs to focus more on managing the game and allowing someone else to call the plays. I'm just thinking that it's just too much. I'm starting to see that as a problem. I saw a play where there was a call that he felt was missed, and he was arguing with the ref, and he had to abruptly stop and get the next play into Tony Romo, and he couldn't finish the discussion with the ref because he's also calling the plays. And one of the announcers said, Garrett must have forgot that he's got to also get that play in. Now, would he have challenged? We don't know, because he had to stop and get the play in to Tony, who have already had communication issues and already had end-of-the-game management issues. So I think Jerry Jones, as an owner GM, I don't have a problem with it. I'm starting to really look at Jason Garrett, and I'm wondering what can be done. I want to remind everybody that's talking about Sean Payton. It took Sean Payton 4 seasons before he actually did get to the Super Bowl and win. He didn't walk into New Orleans and win a Super Bowl. It took 4 seasons. And he had some, 10-6, 9-7 years in there. So let's not just dump Jason Garrett out there just yet. But I am watching. I am a little bit concerned. All right. Before we talk games, midseason MVP. Let's go with K-Star first. Who would your midseason MVP be and why?
You know, I feel as if the consensus, and it's definitely deservedly so, this was very tough for me. It's like splitting hairs. Consensus is Matt Ryan because the Falcons are undefeated on the season. He's been absolutely tremendous. And we look at Peyton Manning, who's also been very, very good. But I'm going to go a little bit of a different route here, and here's why. When you look at this guy, and I just actually traded from the NFL, I'm going to go with Andrew Luck at 5-3. And the reason why I'm going with Andrew Luck is because I look at that roster. Now, you look at the Colts offensive line, and it's horrendous. It's terrible. I mean, the guy runs for his life. He's been sacked 19 times in the season. And what he's doing now as a rookie is unbelievable. This is a team that was 3-13 last season, had a number one pick in the draft for a reason. They were terrible. They had no good quarterback play. They didn't play any good defense. They're still not playing good defense. They still can't run the football. They have guys leaving if you can drop Donnie Avery and T.Y. Hilton. It's bad. What Andrew Luck is doing on that football team right now is amazing. Now, the only one counter that you can maybe connotate to it is the fact that, maybe it's just an emotional high right now for the Colts because of the emotional situation with the coach. But as far as individual play goes, this man being a rookie and just bringing this team together at 5-3, no one expected that. I'm going to go with Andrew Luck. I don't foresee it holding throughout the whole season because he is a rookie. I do foresee, Peyton Manning and Matt Ryan ultimately coming down to it because, I just don't see how he can sustain this with that depleted roster of talent. But I'm going to go with Andrew Luck right now.
Surprise there. All right. Train?
I'm honestly going to have to go with Matt Ryan, man. Dude, the team is 8-0. And his play has a lot to do with that. And, as much as we say this is a quarterback's league, I mean, their defense is solid. It's not like, out of your mind, but it's solid. It's solid enough to allow the offense to do its thing. And the offense is doing its thing truly, definitely due to the play and the performance of Matt Ryan. And the team is 8-0. You can't close the blind out of that. And we keep looking for the game that someone's going to catch up with him. But until then, man, midseason, you got to go with Matty Ice.
Yeah, I'll give that one a little more credit. I don't see the luck. I think he's doing a decent job as a rookie on a mediocre team, but I wouldn't go so far as to say MVP. But, you know, my pick is real simple. I got to go with Tony Romo. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. My pick is my pick would be Peyton Manning. You know, this is a guy who was out of football for a year, had four neck surgeries. He didn't go back to his team. He went to a brand new team that had to learn his system. And he is now the top rated passer in the NFL. He has a higher passer rating than Aaron Rodgers. And his team is 5-3 and leading that division. So it's not a hollow passer rating. It's substantive. And, you know, I mean, you know, when I really became convinced was against, I believe it was, you guys can correct me, was it against the Chargers that they went down 24-0? And I said I saw a look in Peyton Manning's eye at halftime, and I tweeted, Denver's going to come back and win this game. 35 unanswered points in the second half in San Diego to win that game. I mean, it's a Herculean world-class performance. And so I would say Matt Ryan is certainly an MVP candidate. But, man, when you look at what Peyton Manning has gone through to get to where he is now, I mean, if he keeps playing at this level and he is looking just like the old Peyton Manning but just on a new team, it's going to be tough if Denver can get to the playoffs, you know, win that division and finish, you know, 11-5 or something like that. I mean, that's going to be a hard argument. Even if Atlanta goes 13-3, 14-2, I would still put my money on Peyton Manning. And I'm not saying Matt Ryan's not a worthy candidate, but I don't know. Peyton Manning is just, you know,
Real quick, kind of funny. Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning have the same exact amount of passing yards. They both had 2404 on the dot exactly, and both teams are 5-3.
Yeah.
Point that out.
Yeah, well, and Andrew Luck's got a 79.9 passer rating. You know, and I'm not saying it to, you know, necessarily say he's not having a good year. You know, as a
QBR,
what's that?
It says QBR, I believe it's fifth in the league with 76.1. I'm going to double check that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing with Luck right now, for me is accuracy. You know, I mean, he's not even hitting 60% in the NFL. You got it as a quarterback, you got to get 60% of your passes, and he's not even there yet. You know, and I'm not saying the guy, you know, no mistake. I'm not hating on the guy, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, that's something that has to improve. And I'm sure it will. I'm positive it will. But right now, it's just not – that's not the case. So he's got a lot of yards. But, you know, imagine if he was throwing 60, 62, 65%, you know. And if he was at that level, I'd say, okay, because that's very important as a quarterback. Accuracy, that's key. That's important, you know. Yep. And the top quarterbacks do that week in and week out. They're going to throw 65%. That's kind of the standard. Got to get 65%. And he's not there yet. He will get there. I have all the faith in the world that he will. He's very good.
He needs help. He needs help. Those guys drop a lot past him.
And I think,
every week.
I think for Andrew Luck, the conversation is more about, you know, rookie of the year. Because he would be the leading candidate simply because the team is 5-3, even though RG3 is more a dynamic player. And I think RG3 happens to be a little bit of a better all-around quarterback. But his team's 3-6, you know. So, I can't hate on Andrew Luck at 5-3 on a team that was 2-14 last year. Yeah, I mean, rookie of the year to me. I mean, to me, it's not even debatable. To me, right now, I'd give it to Andrew Luck. Are you guys? I mean, K-Star, are you picking Houston over Chicago, or are you just stating the case?
No, I actually convinced myself that I'm definitely going Houston over Chicago.
Okay, so that'll be game one. K-Star's got Houston, Train's got Chicago, and I'm sorry, Train, I'm going to go ahead and go with Houston on this. It's just a gut. It's really it. I mean, it's just a gut feeling that Houston's gonna win. So I got nothing other than a gut. So that's our first game. Chargers 4-4 at the Bucks, 4-4. K-Star.
I'm going to go with Tampa, man. They're playing some really good football. They've won three straight. Vincent Jackson's having a big year, and we all saw what Doug Martin did to the Raiders with a 251-yard game. Josh Freeman's playing really good football, and they are very good at stopping the run. Philip Rivers had a miserable season, so I got to go with Tampa here.
Trey?
I think I like Tampa myself, man. Definitely Doug Martin. Vincent Jackson will probably be the, this will probably be a revenge game for him. You know, he definitely feels like the Chargers didn't treat him right. And he's being treated right in Tampa Bay. So, yeah, I wanted to go Tampa on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers, you know, unfortunately they're looked at as the AFC Cowboys, underachievers year after year, underperformers year after year. You know, and I'd like to pick them, but I'm going to agree with you guys. I'm going to go with the Bucks too. And I think the main thing is the emergence of Martin, the running back there. That guy is, 251 yards last week. That's insane. And I don't see nothing in San Diego that makes me believe that they're going to have much luck stopping him. Freeman, I'm not a believer in Josh Freeman, but he has been playing better lately. I don't believe in them, but I'm going to go with the Bucks. Bills at the Pats, I included it. It's a division game, and so that's the main reason. And I also included it because this is, again, my favorite term, trap game. Pats are home. They're 5-3. The Bills are on the road. They're 3-5. There's absolutely no reason why the Pats shouldn't win this game, and yet it's a trap game. that said, I'm going to go ahead and go with the Pats. K-Star?
Yeah, I got to go with New England coming off the bye. You know, they lost to Buffalo last season. They had a very close game for a while earlier in the season before the Pats blew it open. I got to go with Patriots here. I'm pretty big.
K-Star, Train?
Patriots. Thanks.
Fair.
All right, Giants 6-3. Travel to Cincinnati to play the Bengals 3-5. A lot of 3-5 teams on the schedule because my opinion, and this is just me talking, as we enter into week 10, if you're at week 10 and you've got 6 losses, you're not mathematically eliminated, but you're really in trouble at 6 losses. And so anyone 3-5 needs a win to keep their playoff hopes alive, to keep themselves on the radar. And so the Bengals, at 3-5 in a very competitive division. We've seen this Bengals team play well. Giants are coming off a disappointing loss at home against Pittsburgh. And, you know, will Cincinnati step up and try to save their season? Let me start with K-Star. K-Star?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry about that. clearing my throat.
Hello.
Okay.
K-Star. You started talking. All right, Train, why don't you say something? we lost. Go ahead.
We're just losing? Okay. Giants Bengals, man, it's one of those games where I really like Cincinnati, man, and I'm looking for their team to wake up. And they haven't done it. And this can probably be the game that they do it in. So just for the sake of laughs, you know, I'm really going to give the Bengals a chance on this. I'm really going to give the Bengals a chance because, I mean, the Giants, they do it every year, man. They start out hot. They find some point in the year where they fall away, and then they pick up steam later on at some point. So I'm going to give the Bengals a chance on this one, and I'm going to go with the Bengals this one.
Okay, we have K-Star back. We were with the
Giants.
That's all right, Giants at the Bengals.
Yeah, I got to go with New York. Tough loss last week to my Steelers, but Cincinnati isn't playing well. I believe New York just – they're still a front runner in the NFC. I go with New York. Eli Manning has to play a rebound game here, and the Bengals defense has been struggling as of late.
Yeah, this is a classic. I'm going to root for Cincinnati and pick New York game. I'd love to see Cincinnati take out the Giants. you know, bring them down to 6-4 and make them, you know, where we can see them. Because right now they have 2-game lead in the loss column. But for picks, I got to go with the Giants. Just too talented, too many weapons, and I don't see the Bengals matching up very good with the Giants. Let's start with Train. This is his division. Big game. The Lions resurgent a bit. Now have come back to 4-4. The Vikings are still a very surprising team at 5-4. And a huge, huge division game, and it's Train's division. So what's your take on this game?
Man, Detroit winning this game to make a huge tilt and have them in playoff contention. There's a possibility, high possibility, that Percy Harvin won't be playing. And without Percy Harvin, that's a serious weapon that they're missing on offense. So with that notion, I'm going to have to go with the Lions.
K-Star.
Got to go with Detroit. You know, Matt Stafford's playing a lot better football these past two games. They're finally putting points on the board. McKellar sure had a big game last week, and we've seen Christian Ponder start turning the ball over on a more frequent basis these last four games. That's a recipe for disaster. If Detroit gets some turnovers, and I assume they will, because they're going to put some points on the board initially, Minnesota can find themselves in some pretty big trouble. I got to go with Detroit.
Yeah, I was watching the Carolina. I actually went to the bar for a little bit. Sorry, I just had a thought. And watched Carolina and Washington, and the guy next to me was a huge Detroit fan, so I actually was peeping some of the Detroit-Jacksonville game. Now, it was Jacksonville, but Detroit looked like they were starting to put something together. It looked a little bit like the team from early last year. So I don't think they're going to go far. I don't believe in them. I don't believe in their coach. But for this game, I've got to pick Detroit to beat Minnesota. And, you know, let's realize Minnesota's lost two straight. Atlanta, undefeated, division game, going to New Orleans and playing the 3-5 Saints. I'm going to start because I've already picked the Saints. And I'm going to tell you guys, I said the Saints weren't done, and then they lost to Denver, and I said, okay, and I may have put a bullet in them prematurely. What I saw against Philly, and we didn't talk about that game, is what I was expecting to see against Denver. I was expecting to see Steve Spagnuolo is a very good defensive coordinator, and I don't know what has been going on, but finally against, now you could say it's Philly, but you know, Philly's got some weapons. You know, Macklin and LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson and Michael Vick still, you know, he's not a bad quarterback. He's not playing, you know, what we're used to seeing. And that Saints defense played it the best game. Now, maybe statistically they still gave up a decent amount of yards, but they kept Philly from scoring. They got at Michael Vick all game, dialed up some crazy blitzes. I mean, that's what I was expecting from Spagnuolo. I don't know why it worked this week, and either it didn't work or we didn't see it. But that's the defense that, you know, allow points from 20 to 20, keep them out of the end zone, and pressure the quarterback. And I truly think that's what we're going to see against Atlanta. They're home. This is a 3-5 team. If they go to 3-6, they're pretty much done. Even at 3-5, they might be done. I think New Orleans is going to take out Atlanta. And one last thing. I've heard this before from coaches and players that have played on teams that have gone 8-0, 9-0, 10-0. And while they say they don't pay attention during, like when you're being interviewed, they're like, I'm not worried about it. They are. That's what I've heard across the board. And every game you win, it becomes that much tougher to stay undefeated. So you have the going away on the road, playing a division rival, a team that you know can score points and play good offense. Now we saw the defense actually step up and play a little bit better, control a decent offense in Philly. I think all of the factors are there, and Atlanta goes down. Train?
Well, like you said, it was Philly. Yeah, a team that did that very similar to Dallas tends to implode. So, no, I'm not going to give any credit to their defense for that game. Their defense couldn't stop running that game. And had Philly protected the ball a little better,
they would have easily pulled out that win, and they didn't. With that said, Atlanta is definitely not Philly. Atlanta's a lot more solid on both sides of the ball, both offensively and both defensively. I think this game would be no different. It would definitely won't be an easy one because Saints can definitely put up points. Again, their offense is still impressive. It's still run by Drew Brees. But I think when you consider the better team, Atlanta is the better team. Yeah, they're undefeated, and they will remain undefeated. So I'm going to go with Atlanta for this one.
Let me just say this, though. They're not undefeated to New Orleans. Remember that. They're undefeated to us, and they're the better team to us. New Orleans plays them twice a year. And so records go out the window in division games. You know that. So, you know, let's not think that that record is going into the Superdome meaning anything. If anything, it's going to make them even more hungry to take these boys out. If this was not a division game, I'd be with you. But this is a division game. And I think what I saw last week, yeah, it was Philly. But many of us picked Philly to win a division. Many of us thought Philly was going to be an NFC contender this year. Let's not forget where we viewed Philly at the beginning of the year. And just because they haven't lived up to expectations, still the same team.
I understand that. And my only reference is live to now. And when I look at that game from last week, I was not impressed by that defense. I think that defense really just got, you know, Philly's playing off. They're playing bad. They're playing offense bad. They ran the ball well and then imploded when it came down to punching the end zone. Atlanta is not that team that does that. So they're going to put up points to beat Atlanta.
And you don't think the Saints is going to put up points?
Yeah, I said that. I said it's going to be a good game.
Okay.
It's going to be a good game. But
I know what you said. I just clarified when you said they're going to put up points. I'm like, wait a minute. You don't think that's going to be a problem?
I don't know if you hear me when I talk, man.
No. I heard you. I heard the words. I was understanding where you saying it to say you don't think they're going to put up points. And you said, no, so I just wanted to, you know, if that's what it's going to take, I would say to Atlanta, this is one team be careful of getting in a shootout with. Yeah, this is one team that can match you point for point. Defense, okay. Let's see what defense shows up on the Saints because, you know, this year, 400 yards a game, and the defense has been atrocious. I just saw things that I hadn't seen all year against Philly. But offensively, yeah, these Saints can put up, you know, Drew Brees can go off. So, but anyway, K-Star.
I am going with Atlanta. But real quick, I do want to say that while, you know, the Eagles didn't put points on the board and they were able to rush the ball, the Saints, you got to have to give them a little credit. They did get to Michael Vick. They had some pretty unique blitz packages. They definitely hurried the quarterback quite a bit. So, and the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, they held them 13 points and scored a touchdown. But nonetheless, going with Atlanta, the fact of the matter is Atlanta doesn't turn the ball over. You know, Michael Turner is starting to get going a little bit. They're extremely balanced. It's going to be a very close game because it is a divisional game. They play each other very tough. But I really do think that the loss of Sean Payton, I just don't think it can be overstated enough. I don't think they can win these type of games without him being on the sideline with some of his, you know, scripty runs and stuff like that. So Atlanta's the more balanced team. They go with Atlanta.
Oh, let me clarify one thing. Because I have Michael Turner on my fantasy team, and even though I hated it, I mean, he got me a lot of points. But let me just clarify one thing. Before you guys go anointing Michael Turner as being back, Jay Ratliff had a high ankle sprain. Michael Turner got the bulk of his yards after our nose tackle, our Pro Bowl, 3 years in a row, Pro Bowl nose tackle, left the game. I'm not saying I have Michael Turner. I had him last year. Michael Turner has the potential to be an elite running back. He can, but he has not played to that level this year. That's a fact. And he had 100 and I want to say 9 yards against us. 42 came on one play, and most of those yards came after Ratliff. Ratliff was out of the game. When Ratliff was in the game, Turner wasn't doing anything. Thus why they were held to 6 points for three quarters. So I'm not saying Atlanta's not a good team, but there's some merit to the fact that they haven't been running the ball like they have in the past. I know I got Michael Turner, and before this game, he wasn't doing nothing for me. I was really upset about it. And, of course, he decides, you know, this game, Yeah, now you're going to get 16 fantasy points. Get out of my face. Anyway.
Not a big advocate for Michael Turner from a fantasy perspective, but those Saints can be run on again. I just the balance of the Falcons is just it's going to be too much, I think.
They give up a lot on the line.
Yeah, they do. They do. I agree. The Saints give up a lot of yards. And I'm curious to see if Spagnuolo dials up those blitzes like he did against Vic, what Matt Ryan's going to do. Because, you know, we've seen great quarterbacks when you put the heat on them. You know, there aren't a lot. I mean, Romo is elusive. Big Ben is elusive. Aaron Rodgers is elusive. You know, there are quarterbacks that can kind of make time and get out there. I'm curious to see if Schaub will be able to do that or not. I don't view him as the most agile quarterback back, you know, there. So it'll be interesting to see. But I really want to see this game. I don't know what time it is, and it might be playing at the same time as my Cowboys.
Yeah, it's on at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay.
This government this year is so just asinine. But go ahead.
Yeah, in Philly, it's a 4:30 game, and it's in Philly. I don't get it. But anyway, Jets 3-5 at Seattle 5-4. Again, 3-5 team, elimination game. Maybe not elimination game, but certainly if the Jets go to 3-6 and we expect the Patriots to handle the Bills and go to 6-3, now we're talking three games. You know, you're down three games with seven games to play. That's a tall order. In the AFC East, so the Jets are very much in a must-win game. However, they are going to arguably the toughest stadium in the NFL to play, a Seattle team that has a pretty good defense and a manageable offense. So with that said, K-Star, what are your thoughts on the Jets at Seattle?
I don't think the Jets have a chance at all. We might see some Tebow in this game, which I doubt actually thinking about it again because, you know, Rex Ryan just refuses to put him in. But they should because The Seahawks, you know, they generate a lot of turnovers at home. They run the ball extremely well. The Jets have been getting a lot of yards on the ground lately. And, yeah, they're going to put us a point. And the fact of the matter is Mark Sanchez will probably throw quite a few interceptions in that Quest Field, the loudest home field of, advantage in the NFL. I just don't see a way or a picture scenario in which Seattle loses this football game at home to New York.
Trey?
Doesn't matter in Seattle. So, Seattle.
I'm disappointed in the Jets. Sanchez isn't getting it done. I mean, we can sit here and debate whether Romo's getting it done or whether Vic's getting it done. But Sanchez just is not – I don't think there's any debate that he's not getting it done. And you have a first-round draft pick – as your backup quarterback. You went out and got him. I don't know why, but unlike a Kyle Orton or some of these other backups, this is a guy who started 13 games last year, went to the playoffs, took out K-Star Steelers. I mean, and then you went and traded for him, however they got him. And now you have him not only as your backup quarterback, but he's your utility guy on punt return. He's a wide receiver. He's a fullback. You don't know what to do with him. And I think it's just disgusting that a guy who, that level, national champion, et cetera, and we just, you know, I mean, he's not Matt Leinart. I know he can't throw the ball, but he brings so much to the team. Give him a shot. Because Sanchez ain't doing it. Now, here's where I get with K-Star and I say, I think it's time. Give this guy an opportunity because I'm looking at the backup, and I'm thinking this backup might be as good as a starter, maybe better if you look at complete game, everything he brings to the table. But so that said, since there's no sign that Tebow is going to get a significant amount of playing time, I'm going to go with Seattle. If Tebow was starting this game, I'd pick the Jets because this is the kind of game that Tebow would win.
Before you go to the next game, and I just wanted to ditto what you said. That's probably the most disappointing thing to me about the Jets this season. When I saw them trade for Tebow, everybody was looking for him to eventually take Mark Sanchez's starting spot. That wasn't necessarily what I was looking for. I just thought that you would see an offense that would feature a Tebow package and that when necessary, it would be used to change you know, to change the momentum of the game into the Jets' favor. And they pretty much wasted giving away draft picks or whatever to get this guy because they haven't used him. And their record just, it's not, you know, besides the record, you haven't even made it exciting from a fan's point of view enough for us to, like, turn and watch you guys because we don't know what Tebow's going to do, but we do know what Tebow's going to do because he's going to be on the bench. Like, he's been doing all season long, and it just kind of sucks.
I would say that's actually arguably the most disappointing thing of the season. Now, granted, he can't throw very well at all, but he's a guy who can really help a lot of football teams or possibly even start for a couple. And while, again, he may be an ugly style of play a quarterback, he's pretty damn popular. So it's a shame to see how they're wasting Tim Tebow. It really is. To me, it's just the biggest disappointment of the NFL season because a lot of people like watching the drama that is Tim Tebow play, but we just have none. And the Jets aren't better at all for it. They're actually hurting themselves by not utilizing his multiple facets of skills.
Yeah, I think we all agree. If the Jets were performing and the record was better, and I'd even say if I could look at the Jets like I look at the Cowboys, and to some degree like I look at the Eagles and say, I don't believe it's the quarterback. I don't believe it's Romo. I don't believe it's Vic. I really don't. You know, when you look at an Arizona team, they're still trying to find a quarterback. You know what I mean? But when I look at the Jets and I watch Sanchez play, he doesn't play very well. He has flashes, but, you know, most of his plays are bad. He's one of the lowest-rated quarterbacks in the NFL. And so you have a team that's struggling, and you have a quarterback that's not even – you can't even statistically look and say, well, he's putting up the numbers, so what's going on? To me, it's a no-brainer. Put Tebow in. Even if you did, like Train said, a series here and there to see what he does, a couple of series in a row, you know, but I don't know. I don't get it. Last game of the week, I call this the elimination game. Of course, if the Cowboys lose, then I'll come on next week and I'll say, well, they're still mathematically alive. But, you know, the Giants are 6-3 right now. The Giants beat the Bengals, as many of us expect. They're going to go to 7-3. And the Cowboys or the Eagles will be at 3-6. And the Redskins are already at 3-6. To me, if you're at 6 losses on Sunday or more, you really, really have a long shot. I mean, you're not mathematically eliminated, but you're really on the outside looking in. And so, to me, this is an elimination game. Now, if the Giants lose and they go to 6-4, okay, well, maybe not then, because you're still 2 games out from the Giants, and so maybe you still have a chance. But this game is an elimination game, in my opinion, and whoever loses is really in trouble in the NFC East. Now, obviously, I'm going to pick the Cowboys. And, you know, as much as I talked about what the Saints did to Philly, I will agree, if the Saints can do that to Philly, and I think Philly has the potential to be a good team, but if the Saints can do that, the Saints defense can do that, what do you think the Dallas defense is going to go in there and do to Philly? You don't think that Rob Ryan wasn't watching film? And he's going to be dialing up some blitzes and getting in Michael Vick's face. So we're talking about a better defense. And the question is, can Dallas score some points? And I believe they can. I don't think the Philly defense is very good. They fired a defensive coordinator. They gave up 28 points to a Saints team. And I know it wasn't all Drew Brees, but it was still 28 points. Let me just say this. I know we have a lot of Cowboy fans listening, and I get a lot of heat from Cowboy fans that just want to just pack it in. This is a game that really reveals whether or not you have any character, okay? This is a game, for all of you Cowboy fans, I said this is the year. This is the game that the year is going to hinge on right here. It's a division game, and you're at 3-5. You need this win. This is a must win for both teams. And if Dallas can pull this win out on the road in Philly, which is not an easy place to play, then we still got a shot to make some noise. If Dallas doesn't, there isn't much left to talk about. Okay? That said, I got to go with my Cowboys. Train?
Damn, dude, this is a tough one. I might change my mind 6 or 7 times at the end of the week. Stick with your pick. I'm probably changing it. Don't do that.
Dude, this is like who's the lesser of two evils, man. Both these teams implode, and it really is tough to pick one. Even with Philly being at home, it's not even really an advantage. And they don't play like it's an advantage.
No.
All right. I'm going to go with Dallas. And for right now, I'm going to go with Dallas simply because their defense does play well. And Philadelphia still hasn't figured out how to get their best weapon to win games for them, and that best weapon being LeSean McCoy. So with that said, I think Dallas defense will do enough this game to allow the offense to put it away. So I'm going to go with Dallas.
K-Star.
I, too, am going to go with Dallas. Look, as bad as both teams' records are, that I think the Cowboys are playing a lot better than Philly is. Both have problems in their offensive line, but the fact of the matter is Dallas gets to the quarterback. DeMarcus Ware will be on Michael Vick's neck, breathing down it all day. A secondary can match up man-to-man coverage with the Eagles, and really not too many teams can sit here and say they could do that matchup at the speed of the Eagles receivers, but the Cowboys can. Look, I would even take a step further that I feel, and this is just gut feeling, I could be 100% wrong off the side of my face when I say this, but I feel that the Cowboys were to go into Philly and blow out the Eagles, honestly, I would not be surprised if they fired any of these. I just think it's got to that point where there's just a lot of reaction going on in Philly, a lot of disappointment, a lot of resentment. People are better in Philadelphia, and rightfully so. This is a team that is also ultra-talented but can't get together. They're not even giving LeSean McCoy the ball enough. I think Dallas went big, and I just don't be surprised if you heard here first. If you see Andy Reid hold him to the season, just don't be surprised.
If I see Andy Reid what?
Fired. I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas goes in there, and I expect them to win this game, but if Dallas goes in there and embarrasses Philly, and you don't see LeSean McCoy get the ball, and I could see all those things happening, I would not be surprised Andy Reid was dismissed from his duties as coach this season. I really wouldn't.
Wow.
Tensions are running high in Philly, man. I just have this weird feeling about it.
I got you, but I definitely don't see it as a blowout. But I do see it as a good game won by Dallas. Definitely.
Well, I will say this. You know, where I don't necessarily. I don't agree with Stephen A. Smith as much as I used to. I will say this. He made a very good point about Andy Reid losing his son and what that may have done to him. There's a lot of evidence that maybe the Eagles aren't responding to Andy Reid anymore. And all I know is I remember a couple of years ago when Wade Phillips was the coach, and Dallas went to 1-7, and Green Bay, well, actually 1-6, and Green Bay came to town, and Green Bay embarrassed Dallas. You know, and I when K-Star said embarrassed, that's what it made me think of. I mean, it was something like 45-13 or something, and after Jerry Jones had gave Wade Phillips a vote of confidence 2 weeks prior, he fired him the next day. And Jason Garrett came in and finished the season 5-3. So I think there's something to what K-Star says. I never predict blowouts with the Cowboys, not this Cowboy team. I used to back in the day when I had a little more confidence in them. I'll be happy with a 1-point win in overtime. I really don't care. But understand why K-Star said that. There's a lot of evidence that Philly could be in big trouble, and are they going to pull it together against Dallas, their division rival, on Sunday? I guess we'll find out, but that's the question. What team of the two can get it together and play well? So,
no. And also one last thing, the Eagles had that dreaded players meeting only before the Saints game, and
They lost that, so I'm telling you, just look out for it. It's, I think it's very possible.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Went a little longer than I thought, but good stuff, good topics, good show. Train, any final thoughts?
You know, we did the whole debate thing, and I was hoping to put one of you guys on the side, but I didn't. So, yeah, we win this weekend. We come in next week with some mad trash. And if we lose, still going to come in next week with some mad trash. The thing would be 7-2 and still be in control of the division. So, with that said, I'm looking forward to the games this weekend, man. Let's go Bears.
Okay. All right. Any thoughts, final thoughts, K-Star?
Just looking forward to the games this weekend. The season's going by pretty quick, as it normally does. And really excited for Houston, Chicago. But more importantly, Pittsburgh, Kansas City. Why did we not cover that Monday night game? That should be a spectacle. I cannot wait to see it. Game of the week to me. Now I'm just playing.
So nice.
Looking for the games this weekend.
Let's see. I just checked the chat room, and let me give a shout out to our good friend from Australia, Adam, who's sitting in the chat room commenting away, and none of us even really responded. Let me just do it before we get off the air. It's not just picking on Romo this year. It's Vic, Sanchez, Castle, Cobb. It's been a what have you done lately league for a long time. Adam, you know, with all due respect, Romo always gets picked on. He's been picked on since his inaugural year as starter when he fumbled the snap in Seattle. And it's something about being a quarterback in Dallas and having a star on your helmet, you get picked on. And you just have to be a close fan of the Cowboys to understand that, but Romo gets more scrutiny in the NFL right now than any quarterback in the NFL. Vic might be a close second because he's playing like crap, but Romo is always getting scrutinized. So, Adam also would pick J.J. Watt as MVP. Interesting.
Defense MVP for sure. Him and Tillman, those guys are going neck and neck, and they match up this Sunday.
Yeah, I almost wanted to go with Charles Tillman, but you know, the undefeated record speaks a lot.
JJ Watt's for real. I mean, he's a game changer. There's no doubt about it. Philly's O-line was tissue paper Monday Night Football. They would have made any defense look stellar. Tebow may not be a great throw, but he sure isn't going to improve without game time. Whichever team picks him up next will thrive. The Saints can do that to Philly, so Dallas can win. Yet T picked the Saints versus Atlanta. I'm not sure I understand. I'm not sure I understand. Trey, explain that one to me. I'm picking the Saints did that to Philly. I'm picking Dallas to beat Philly, and the Saints did that to Philly, and I'm picking the Saints over Atlanta. So I'm not sure.
See, the Saints can do it in Philly. So, yeah, so Dallas defense can be Philly.
I think he might be referring to the offensive line situation there.
I think it may be, you know, maybe caliber of team. I don't know. Maybe he's referring to the caliber of team that, you know, Saints close to being as caliber team as Dallas, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my point there was I saw defense from the Saints I haven't seen all year. I saw an aggressive pass rush that I haven't seen all year. And if they do that, you know, any good quarterback gets frazzled with a rush. And so if they can dial up those kind of blitzes that I saw them doing to Michael Vick against Matt Schaub, and we know the Saints offense can rack up yards and points with the best of them. When Drew Brees is on, he's on. So if that defense can give him any help, which I think they will, and that's why I'm picking the Saints and their home. So Romo proved last week that he can play four quarters without turning the ball over. Philly's O-line proved last week that they can offer less protection than a fishnet condom.
Good one.
Yes, and Romo also did that against Carolina too. As I say, 13 interceptions is a little bit misleading. You know, 5 in 1 game, 4 in another, that's 9. The other 6 games, he's had 4. And I think that's more like what Romo's career has been like. You know, he's had 2 high turnover games, and it's skewing what we normally get from Tony Romo. So that's kind of my point. And, you know, at the end of the day, when I look at Dallas and Philly, the first thing I do is I look at quarterback play. Clearly, Romo's playing better than Vic. No one's going to disagree with that. And secondly, I look at the head coach. I'm losing a little faith in Jason Garrett, but I have no faith in Andy Reid at this point. So there you have it. All right. Thanks, Adam. Yeah, a guy tunes in, guy in the chat room might be asleep now. I don't know what time it is in Australia, but we really appreciate the loyalty. Dr. Train, as always, good luck with your game. K-Star, yeah, whatever. No, I'm just kidding. appreciate you guys, as always. Stay tuned, Madden Voice fans. We've already done 2 shows this week. I don't know if I'm going to do a show on Friday. I don't want you guys to get diluted too much with us. So let's see what goes on in the NFL land over the next couple of days. See if there's enough material to come in and do a show on Friday. If there is, I'll do one. If there's not, we've already previewed all the big games. So I'm kind of leaving it up in the air, and forgive me. But if you check out Blog Talk Radio, Twitter, Facebook, somewhere in there will be information on whether or not there'll be a game on, I mean, a show on Friday. So with that said, for Dr. Train, for K-Star, I want to thank everybody for making us such a popular show. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Catch us on Twitter. Catch us on Facebook. Tune in every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, to the Madden Voice. All feuds settled on the field. And, oh, yeah, check us out and get educated. Everybody take care. Good night.